knew it would happen. It was bound to. They made a complete and utter hash of changing trains at Munich, didn't they? Apparently they missed the train for Vienna, so they caught the night express to Berlin. So far, so good. They were supposed to change at Regensburg. Doesn't it sound ghastly? If I were a German, I'd change it instantly to Tunbridge Wells. Anyway, when they got to Regensburg, Father, of course, was incarcerated in the loo and he couldn't unlock the door. Surprise, surprise! When Father goes to heaven, there'll be an almighty battle royal between him and God over who gets first use of the loo. I wonder if the expats up there can get Radio 4 on long wave. Where was I? Ah, yes, Father locked in the train loo at Regensburg. Well, as you can imagine, Rosie threw the most enormous tantrum and William came out in spots all over his shins and elbows and... Why am I telling you all this? Why am I playing this game? They're not on a train. They haven't set foot on a train ever since we moved into this old station master's house in so-called France. Isn't France ghastly? Trust the French to pick a name like that for their country. Where was I? Ah, yes, on the train. They're just pretending for the sake of Father. Pretending? Good grief, if that's pretending, God save us if they ever get serious.
I am serious, William. I'm deadly serious. It was entirely your fault we cocked up the business of changing trains at Regensburg.
It was not my fault. How could I help Father locking himself in the loo?
You should have gone in with him.
It's against railway working practices for two people to share the same lavatory.
But you wouldn't have been sharing it. You'd have been there solely as an onlooker, a sort of Red Cross official observer to make sure Father didn't strangle himself in his braces or blow up the soap dispenser with his pipe. You could have pulled a communication cord.
This whole thing is absurd.
I know it is, William. If you hadn't insisted on trying to take brass rubbings on the Ausgang signs at Munich Station,
You see, you've fallen for it too.
Fallen for what?
Playing this ridiculous game of pretending we're travelling round Europe by train with Father. It's bloody ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous. We're doing it for Father. And I don't know why you're bellyaching about it. You used to love doing it when you were a little boy.
Oh, I know, but things were different then. My voice hadn't broken. I hadn't got those awful pubic hair thingies.
Oh, William, you are a twerp. I used to love those days.
Did you?
Yes. You used to spend hours and hours poring over your Thomas Cook International timetables. You dragged me around Europe 15 times and I was still in nappy.
Yes. It was fun, wasn't it? Do you remember that time we got stranded at Granada Low Level because you forgot to buy the tickets?
I did not forget to buy the tickets.
You did?
Oh, all right, I did. But I was only crawling at the time. How could I find a ticket office when I was being trodden on all the time by matadors and drunken castanet players? Oh, for Pete's sake, William, why can't you face up to the practicalities of life? Why have you always got to bury your head in the sand and...
A very good day to you, my old Wingsy Bashes. What do you reckon there? Not a lot.
What do you want, Winston?
What do I want, Rosie? What does old Winston wish for and desire? Simple. He is desirous of sharing with you sort of thing his delight and his pleasure in the wondrous bounties of this perfect, succulent and sensuous day what Mother Nature have bestowed on us sort of thing.
Oh, my God, he's found himself a bit of fluff.
That I have, without a shadow of a doubt.
A French bit of fluff, Winston.
Oh, yes, Rosie, that she is, to be sure, right to the tops of her sheer, soap-black stockings. She is what I calls a purebred cross between a young Simone Signore, Brigitte Bardot, the celebrated courtesan La Castiglione, and Dirk Bogarde. And, in addition, she have got a tongue like a rampant hosepipe, look.
What does she do, this bit of fluff?
Well, for a start off, William, she got a nice line in novelty foreplay, what involves hanging upside down from the hat stand with no vest on.
I'm not talking about that, Winston. I'm talking about her job. What's her occupation?
Her occupation, William. What she do for a living? Simple. She's a visiting professor of fine arts, medieval French literature and the Viking culture of Western Picardy. I wish she'd shave under her bleeding armpit.
Winston!
Ah, Rosie, I love the way you says Winston like that. You says it as though you really means it, my lovely, tasty, desirable, golden-headed little fawn.
Winston!
What do you want, Winston? You're up to no good, aren't you?
No, William. Oh, Winston, up to no good. Perish the thought, my old Wingsy Bash. What I am after... What I'm searching and looking for, see, is information regarding the whereabouts of your father, your old dad, look.
He's in the signal box.
Then I shall repair there forthwith. Where are we on our travels, by the way?
En route to Rome.
Well, give my regards to Pope, then. Tell him I seen him on the colour telly when he popped over to Cardiff. Bloody good audience he got there. Must have made a fortune out of his royalties. Right then. I bid you good day, or to use the common parlance, adieu.
I miss the sound of suburban English horses clip-clopping through the English suburban streets. I miss garden centres and jugglers on television and tins of dog meat in the supermarket and pick-your-own-raspberry farms and the Baltic Republics. I'm homesick. I want to go home. And then I saw Winston. He was making his way to Father's signal box. Don't kid yourself, Nancy. Don't delude yourself. You'll be no use to Winston. You're not one of Mother Nature's bits of fluff. Well, of course I'm not. I was educated at an exclusive private school on the south coast of England, and we always wore kilty start-right shoes. I'm sophisticated. I'm refined. I'm a woman of the world. I've got Tito Gobbi's autograph, if you can read his foul Spanish handwriting. I've seen Ibsen at the Royal National Theatre. He was a rather small man with a receding hairline, and I'm too old for childbearing. I'd be useless at providing sprogs for Winston. I hate sprogs. I loathe ankle biters. Can you imagine breastfeeding? It was never my great ambition in life to turn into one of those gadgets that dispenses Mr. Whippy ice cream. I remember when Rosie was at the crawling stage. It was much better than having a Eubank. My God, she was ghastly. Her dummy was always covered with fluff. The trouble with children is that they always attract other people's children. Other people's children, they're so bloody boastful. What do I care if Daddy knows Uffa Fox? What do I care if Mummy was once in the chorus line of the Black and White Minstrel Show? What do I care if... I'll be Winston's Moll. I'll be a vamp. I'll wear a short black silk skirt up to my thighs and fishnet stockings and a blue and white striped jumper and a beret and a scarlet scarf round my neck, and I'll pout my lips and I'll stick up my tits. Sorry, how rude. My badongas, and I'll... Winston threw away his dimp. He sent a long, curving arc of gleaming spit into the rambling roses and the wild lupins, and he clattered up to the steps to the signal box. What the hell was he up to?
Come on in, it's only me.
What you reckon, then?
Oh, no, old boy. I'm sending out signals.
Oh, yeah? What sort of signals?
Signals to girlfriends.
Girlfriends? You got girlfriends? You Randy O'Sullivan?
No, not now. These are the girlfriends of my past, the girlfriends of my youth. Oh, Miranda Toke Anderson, she was one of them.
Oh, double-barreled, eh?
No, I should say so, old boy, not half. Made life fearfully interesting when we took our dogs off.
What?
And then there was Maud Surridge. Hello there, Maud. Can you hear me? It's me, the chap who could never manage it. Liked your brother, though. Splendid chap. He used to let me wear his busby after the Trooping of the Colour. If you had only worn his busby, Maud, I could have managed it then. And his epaulettes and his spurs and his ceremonial sword and... What do you want, Winston?
Me? Old Winston? Oh, what does he want? Well, I'll tell you what he wants, my old Wingsy Bash. He wants your advice as regards and pertaining to the taking of an extensive trip and journey round the continent of Europe, sort of thing.
Ah, a trip around Europe, eh? Well, take my advice, old boy. Don't go with Uncle's coma.
I am. I'm going with my bit of fluff. I intend to take off immediate sort of thing and conduct my amorata and her silky bristles on a grand tour of unrestrained passion and carnal proclivities.
Oh, well, in that case, I wouldn't go to Ulm.
Ulm?
Yeah, that's right, old chap, Ulm. Couldn't buy a decent styptic pencil there for love nor money. The same thing in Klagenfurt and the Dodecanese.
What about Limoges?
Oh, never set foot in the place, old boy. Uncle Scomer insisted on steering well clear of it when we made our grand tour all those years ago.
Who is this Uncle Scomer, blokey?
Oh, it's a profound stinker.
Oh, yeah,
rather. He was my mother's youngest brother, by birth, I think. He was only 3 years older than me. I wonder how many there are left in the world now who are 3 years older than me. Yeah. You know, when you get to my age, considerations like that tend to become most fearfully obsessive.
Is that a fact?
Mm.
Do you know, old boy, if Maud Surridge was still alive today, if she hadn't run off with the bicycling correspondent of the Liverpool Daily Post and come to a sticky end in the lady's devil take the hindmost at Herne Hill, she'd have been precisely 3 years older than me.
Well, I shouldn't bother your arse about that. She still had looked a bugger in her brother's busby, wouldn't she?
And if my wife had been alive, William and Rosie and Nancy's mother, by virtue of mutual conception, with the lights out,
yeah,
she would have been exactly... Now, when we were in Potsdam, on our grand tour all those years ago, she and Uncle Skomer insisted on visiting the burial place of Frederick the Great. It wouldn't interest you, she said to me. You're not interested in death. Well, she was right. I wasn't at the time. But now, you know, old boy, I'm most fearfully interested in burial places.
Are you?
Oh, yes, rather. Do you know who I'd like to be buried with?
Tell me.
The former heavyweight boxing champion of the world, Max Schmeling.
Oh, he'd knock the living shits out of you.
So he would, old boy, so he would. I think I'd better plump for Pythagoras.
Well, all I can say is just keep a sharp lookout for his isosceles triangles. Never trust a Greek with a musical instrument.
Right then, my old pile of hedgehog snots, I shall depart henceforth and at once sort of thing and commence arrangements for my extended European excursion with my bit of fluff.
I thank you for your advice as regards Ulm, Klagenfurt, and the Dodecanese.
No.
And I hope you manage to sort things out at Regensburg.
So, yes, rather. They uncoupled our coach and attached it to the morning milk train to Prague. Or was it Budapest? Well, all I know is that the Waller who finally released me from the ablutions facilities bore a remarkable resemblance to Ferdinand de Lesseps.
Didn't he build the Suez Canal?
He could well have done, old boy, by the size of the monkey wrench he was carrying. I wouldn't have put anything past him. Bloody Suez Canal. My God, how I hate Anthony Eden hats.
I saw Winston jumping down the rickety wooden signal box steps three at a time. He was chuckling to himself, and there was a spring and a bounce to his step as he hurried away along the deserted railway tracks in the direction of the town. I'm not all that old for childbearing. If he really did want a sprog, I could always go and see a specialist with half-moon spectacles. He might recommend intravenous fertilisation. Intravenous fertilisation? Sounds like the motto for some ghastly third-rate girls' private school in the North Midlands. A little while later, I saw William wandering aimlessly across the yard among the bickering hens and the panting ducks. He was wearing his chunky oatmeal cardigan. I should have bought him something smarter for the holes. I was going to buy him one of those gents' blouson jackets. But I didn't fancy the sight of him walking around looking like an outsized self-propelled toilet bag. I went outside into the ghastly French sunlight. Bloody great show-off. And there was Rosie sitting on a bench on the overgrown platform outside the abandoned ticket office.
Hi there, Nancy.
Hello, Rosie. My word, you look happy.
I am.
Ah, sorted out the mess at Regensburg, have you?
No. But I found myself a blokey.
What?
You're not to tell anyone. You've got to promise you won't tell a soul.
Yes, I promise. Who is he?
Well, you remember the man who rented us this house?
The agent?
Yes.
That gorgeous, dishy, handsome, mature creature with the steely grey temples and the cleft chin and the hairy wrists and the expensive socks?
That's him. He's my blokey.
What?
He's my blokey, Nancy.
How? How's he your blokey?
Well, when I went into town the other day for Father's lung balsam, I bumped into him just outside the Credit Lyonnaise thingy. He smiled at me and he took me to a cafe. We drank cassis. We ate crab tartlets. He told me about his wife and their villa in Quiberon. He told me about her lovers. He told me about her thin arms and the lipstick that always stained her teeth. He took me back to his apartment. It overlooked the harbour. We made love. I was shameless, Nancy. I was recklessly, riotously shameless.
Rosie, how could you? How could you?
What? What are you talking about?
How could she? If he was going to be anyone's blokey, he was my blokey. I saw him first. When I met him in the office the day we rented the house, I said to myself, bags you, you gorgeous, lovely, dishy man. He kissed my hand. He held me lightly round the waist when he conducted me to the chair. He looked down at my breasts, with his eyes no less, and he licked his lips slowly. He desired me, he wanted me, I knew it instantly. Oh, what a wife I'd make for him. Never mind Winston. Let's boot Winston into touch. Stuff Winston. That's the man for me. The man with the villa in Quiberon and the expensive socks and the... I haven't got thin arms. Far from it. I haven't got lipstick stains on my teeth. Far from it. I use disposable tissues. We'd have lived just outside Glyndebourne and gone to the opera every night, provided it wasn't cancelled owing to sore throats and bad breath. We'd have gone to the Edinburgh Festival, provided those ghastly spongers from the BBC hadn't booked up all the accommodation. We'd have made love recklessly in Guatemala, and bugger the name of its capital. We'd have made love riotously in Zanzibar with nutmegs attached to my suspenders, and I wouldn't give a jot if he was wearing his expensive socks. He's mine! He's my man! He's my man, Rosie. He's mine, he's mine.
No, he's not, Nancy. He's mine. He's my blokey.
I dashed out blindly into the yard. I bumped into William. What the hell are you doing here?
Planning a derailment.
What?
I've put an obstruction on the line just outside Ventimiglia.
What?
5 wicker bath chairs from Harrogate, a Swedish armored troop carrier, a Dutch minesweeper packed full of gelignite, and, worst of all... a pair of Winston's discarded underpants.
What on earth are you talking about, William?
There's a blind bend just outside Ventimiglia, you see, Nancy. The train comes thundering around the curve, pistons thrashing, exhaust roaring, great sparks from its firebox showering into the night. The driver's all unsuspecting. He can't wait to get back to his mistress with her hairy Italian legs and her thick eyebrows and a voice like a masonry bit on heat. The guard's in his cubbyhole, swinging back cheap Chianti and stuffing himself with garlic sausage. The passengers are all unsuspecting. Armenian traders from Syria with gold bullion strapped to their waists. Lebanese with bucky postcards in the false bottoms of their valises. And fat daughters stuffing themselves with brandy snaps in health farms in the home counties. And Australians sticking spent matches in their navels and eating each other's flip-flops. And Swiss Jehovah's Witnesses, and Corsican cocoa brokers, and... all unsuspecting Nazi, not knowing a thing. The train thunders on. And then the screech of brakes, the jitter of coaches, the clash of couplings, luggage flying off the racks. Crash! Crash! Bang! Crash! Bang! Silence. And then screams, low moans, sobbing, blue lights flashing, spot lamps hissing, sirens wailing, metal cutters screeching. We stagger out of the wreckage, you, Rosie, and I. We're unscathed. I've lost my signed copy of O.S. Knox's Potted History of the LNER, but we're unharmed, Rosie, you and I. Unhurt, undaunted.
But what about Father William? What about him? Is he all right? Is he still in one piece?
Father? Oh, blast, I'd forgotten all about Father. I expect he's still locked in the loo.
That evening, after supper, we all repaired to the yard to drink our digestives and eat the crystallised fruits Winston had brought back from town. Crystallised fruits... I'll crystallise him, don't you make any mistake about that. I'll take his unmentionables and I'll pickle them in brine and I'll... Rosie looks so calm and so cool. I'll give her cool and calm. I saw him first, it was me he ogled, it was me he fancied. I bet his wife's got dandruff and beady little eyes and tired despondent nipples that have given up the ghost. I bet she's... William sat there brooding. There was a distant smile on his face. His eyes were glazed... yet there was a faint glow in them like the moon makes on your washing when you've forgotten to bring it in at night. Father lit up his pipe, sucked in deeply, showered his white ducks with burning fragments of tobacco and said...
Well then, chaps, where are we now?
Just passed through Ventimiglia, Father.
I hope there wasn't an obstruction on the line, William.
No, Nancy. I had a word with the station master at Savona.
What are we doing at Savona?
We're on our way to Nice, aren't we, William?
That's right, Rosie. We're on our jolly way to Nice.
Ah, good old Nice. We stayed at Nice, your mother and Uncle Scomer and I, when we made our grand tour of Europe all those years ago.
Did you, Father?
Yes. It was in Nice that your mother told me what had happened in Vienna.
What happened there? Said goodnight to Jack Buchanan, did you?
No, we went to the Prater.
fearfully pleasant fun, the Prater. We went on the big wheel, and the windows in the compartments had leather straps to pull them up and down. It was fearfully pleasant. And then we dined at the restaurant Prohaska. The head waiter had a moustache like Kaiser Bill. And the orchestra played selections.
Selections from what, Father?
Well, music, old boy, music. That's what orchestras are for. You wouldn't engage the Royal Philharmonic to go hop-picking, would you?
No. No, I don't suppose you would, come to think of it. Mind you, looking at the shifty eyes on the bassoonists, I wouldn't engage them for defusing Judith Chalmers either.
What happened in Vienna, Father?
Well, we came back from the restaurant Prohaska to our quarters. The fine quarters we had, fine quarters. We were staying with chums of Uncle Skomer's in the Graben. Fearfully pleasant chaps, our hosts. They were man and wife. Damned if I could tell the difference, but I suppose they could when it came to the push. Now, they told us stories about going racing at Kuschelbad and Freudenau and attending aviation displays and taking afternoon tea with Ilona Parme, the Hungarian superette.
I wouldn't half mind taking tea with a Hungarian superette. God, blimey, Charlie, you wouldn't see my goulash for dust once I got
Winston,
into the...
Winston, that's quite enough.
Sorry, missus. Sorry about that.
Carry on, Father.
Well, I was just about to go to bed, you see. The butler chappy who looked the spitting image of Dame Vera Lynn had laid my Jim Jams out specially. And your mother turned to me and said, "We're going out, Skoma and I. You won't want to come, will you? We're going to see the sights. You don't like seeing the sights, don't I?" I said. "No," she said, and in the instant they'd gone. Well, I stayed up all night playing Halma with the wife. Or was it the husband? I'm not sure. All I know is she got the most fearfully deep voice and a nose like a soup spoon.
And what happened next, Father?
We caught the train to Nice and Uncle Skoma disappeared.
What?
Yeah, he did a bankruptcy. Took all our money.
What?
Left us high and dry in that hotel in the Promenade des Anglais. That's when your mother spilled the beans. They'd gone out that night in Vienna, she and Uncle Skoma, but it wasn't to see the sights.
No? What was it for, then?
Well, to book into an hotel.
What?
A small, discreet hotel where couples go when they have the urge.
What urge?
Oh, for God's sake, William, grow up. You've got pubic hairs now, you know.
Shut up, you two, shut up. Sorry about that, Father. Do carry on.
Well, they had the urge, and they satisfied the urge. And apparently they satisfied the urge in Florence and Paris and Amiens and Copenhagen and Stuttgart and Ulm. And do you know, chaps, during the whole of that trip, I hadn't had the urge once.
He nodded to himself and smiled. He tapped out his pipe on the forlorn old rabbit hutch and stood up slowly, cracking his knees and creaking his ankles.
Well, then, chaps, Bedfordshire calls, eh? What's the best way of getting there, William?
Well, offhand, without looking at my timetables, I'd say we could get the 1957 from St. Pancras Chair to St. Albans. Or we could catch the... Yeah? I cracked a joke. Did you notice, everyone? I actually cracked a joke. Silly me. Come along, Father, I'll show you the way. Night, everyone.
I'll come with you, I'm worn out. I've had a really busy day.
I expect you have, Rosie. It can be very tiring drinking cassis and eating crab tartlets, can't it?
Good night, Nancy. Good night, Winston.
Good night, Rosie. Sleep tight, mind the bugs don't bite, eh?
Bats flittered and flickered softly. Nightbirds sang. They always do at night, in my experience. The breeze was soft and warm. I looked round the old abandoned station, and I saw ghosts of all the people who had passed through so many years ago. Soldiers bound for the front, timid scholars bound for college, and ice-cold dormitories and bullies with wicked lips. Tired mothers waiting vainly for wanton daughters, commercial travellers bulging with trinkets and broken dreams, priests sodden with brandy, swindlers thin-tongued with greed, failed architects, careworn seamstresses, aged whores and young Hungarian soubrettes.
Well, then, Nancy, I think I'll be off to bed.
No.
What?
Not yet, Winston, not yet, my old Winsy Bash. I stood up from my seat and sat alongside Winston on the parapet of the old well next to the rusting pump. I pressed myself into his body. I ran my hands through his hair. I put my mouth to his ear, and I whispered, "I've got an urge."
"What?"
"I've got an urge, Winston, a deep, yearning urge, and I want to satisfy that urge, Winston, here, now."
"I see. And, if I might be so bold and so personal as to ask and inquire sort of thing, what sort of urge would that be, Nancy?"
I slipped my hand inside his shirt and gently I tweaked the tips of his nipples. I rubbed my breasts against his shoulders. I placed my other hand on the inside of his thigh and squeezed it softly. And I whispered once more, "I've got an urge to tell you something."
"What? What have you got to tell me?"
"I've got a blokey."
"You what?"
"I've got a blokey, Winston. I met him this afternoon outside the credit what's-his-name. We drank cassis in a cafe and we had crab tartlets, and I thought they were rather tasteless and definitely very much overpriced. We went back to his apartment, Winston. His wife was away in their villa at Quiberon. We made love, Winston. I was shameless. I was absolutely recklessly, riotously shameless."
"I see. And what does he look like, this blokey of yours?"
"Wonderful, Winston. Magnificent. He's tall and he's strong. He's got graying temples and steel blue eyes and a cleft chin and expensive socks and he's terribly, terribly manly."
"Shall I tell you something, Nancy?"
"What?"
"That blokey of yours, he's a spitting image of my bit of fluff."
I wanted to scream. I really did. I wanted to scream at the top of my voice. But I suppressed the urge. I always do. Oh, yes, I always do.